Hey, everybody. It is Wednesday, March 13th. Is it fair to say, Jill, it's Friday Eve Eve? You're listening to the Mo News Podcast. I'm Moshe Wanunu.
I don't hate it, Moshe. I'm okay with it. All right. I am Jill Wagner. This is the place where we bring you just the facts and a pleasant spin on a Wednesday.
And we read all the news and read between the lines so you don't have to. We'll get you through that hump day as we make our way through the week here. Jill, I know you're excited about some news that broke late yesterday.
That's right. Beyonce's next album is coming out. It's going to be released on March 29th. It is called Cowboy Carter. And apparently, Moshe, she is doing a cover of Dolly Parton's Jolene, which just so happens to be my favorite Dolly Parton song.
Yeah, a lot of anticipation. So that is 2 weeks from this Friday. You'll get the full drop of the Beyonce album. Jill, I feel like in the headlines, like if it's not Taylor, it's Beyonce, the two of them continue to dominate, just dropping albums left and right and making announcements.
You're right, Moshe. It's like even if we try not to cover them, we can't help it. We will be doing a disservice to everybody.
Jill, to that point, so you have the new full Beyonce album dropping on the 29th, and then exactly three weeks later, will be Tortured Poets Department. That'll drop on April 19th.
So I don't know if you have noticed it. You may have, but you've just never commented. When I post our podcast on my Instagram account, which please everyone follow me, Jill R. Wagner, I usually say, this is the latest from the Tortured Podcasters Department. And I feel like you've never, have you noticed that I say that?
No, I read all the headlines and I guess I missed that. Maybe it's subconscious, maybe it isn't. But Jill, I will take note.
I would say at least twice a week, I would say the latest from the Tortured Podcasters Department. And then I list a few of the stories that we're covering.
Speaking of people who were effectively tortured yesterday, Jill, Robert Herr.
Yeah, that's right. So let's get to some headlines here. Special counsel Robert Herr testified on President Biden's mishandling of classified documents. What were the takeaways?
Bottom line, a rough day for Herr yesterday.
A makeshift plan to send U.S. aid to Ukraine despite inaction from Congress. Another one bites the dust. Why a Republican congressman from Colorado says he won't finish out the rest of his term, narrowing the GOP majority in the House.
Jill, I don't think we've seen this many congressmen abandoning the Capitol midterm.
They're over it. They're done.
They're so over it. They're like, I cannot even finish this.
Higher prices not going anywhere. Inflation data comes in higher than expected for the fourth straight month. To the Middle East, an Israeli-American IDF soldier taken hostage on October 7th has been confirmed dead. And meanwhile, a ship carrying tons of aid is en route to Gaza. New parents, babies, or us is back. Hundreds of new stores are opening. We'll tell you where. What San Francisco is doing with all of its empty office space. And Airbnb is banning all indoor security cameras. Plus, Moshe is on this day in history.
Jill, it's an opportunity to have the age-old debate. How do you pronounce the seventh planet from the sun?
We definitely disagree with it. We've had this debate before.
We've had this on a previous March 13th, and we'll bring it back in honor of its birthday.
Okay, let's start with former special counsel Robert Herr, who testified before the House Judiciary Committee on Tuesday about his investigation into President Biden's handling of classified documents. Now, just to rewind for a second, last month, Herr wrapped up a year-long investigation and recommended that Biden face no criminal charges for holding onto classified documents from his time as vice president. He concluded that Biden carelessly kept classified documents and notebooks at his home, but said that the evidence just wasn't strong enough to charge the president with crimes. He noted that unlike former President Trump, Biden voluntarily gave back the documents. Although he also described President Biden as, quote, a sympathetic, well-meaning, elderly man with a poor memory, likely to be acquitted by any jury. So on Tuesday, Herr faced two different parties trying to achieve different things at the hearing at his expense. You had Democrats annoyed at Herr for the way that he described Biden's memory, and Republicans angry that he didn't bring charges against Biden. Republicans really trying to drive home the point that the special counsel did not exonerate President Biden in his handling of classified materials, as claimed by some Democrats. Here is Republican Congressman Kevin Kiley from California asking her about that.
Today, the ranking member started his opening statement by saying Mr. Herr completely exonerated President Biden and called your report a total and complete exoneration. Mr. Herr, did you completely exonerate President Biden?
That is not what my report does.
Was your report a total and complete exoneration?
That is not what the report says.
So the statement by the ranking member was incorrect, yes?
As I said, the report is not an exoneration. That word does not appear in my report.
So both sides yesterday tried to claim more than the report said in their statements, leading to a lot of corrections by Herr. Democrats, again, as you mentioned, trying to say this exonerates Biden here. And by the way, Herr, you're a total Republican partisan hack. Republicans trying to claim that Biden totally broke the law, trying to overstate allegations against the president here. Herr trying his best not to take the bait, often having to read back from his report and correct the various members who began their questions with, isn't that right? Isn't that right? He's like, actually, no, that's not what I said. Actually, no, that's not what I said. It did come as we also got a transcript of what Biden said in his deposition with Herr. Remember, until now, we've only had Herr's report as he described things and summarized things. Well, we got a transcript yesterday, and it did show us where things are in line and where there was some difference between the way Herr interpreted things. And actually, if you look back at the transcript, so some evidence proving Herr's points that Biden did have memory lapses at times, but others helping Biden, showing that actually he remembered a lot of things during the testimony. One example showed that during his interview with Herr, Biden named the correct month and day that Beau Biden died, but not the year. He was having trouble with the year. Well, Herr focused only on the year issue in his report, saying Biden could not remember the date of his son's death, leaving out the fact that Biden immediately knew the month and the day. So you did see this back and forth here. During the hearing, one congresswoman tried to press Herr into correcting the record. He refused. Here's a bit of that exchange.
Your report on page 208 says that Mr. Biden couldn't come up with the date, the year of his son, Beau Biden's death, when in fact in the transcript it shows that you asked him the month. And do you know what he said, Mr. Herr? He said, oh, God. May 30th. Would you like to correct the record? His memory was pretty firm on the month and the day.
Congresswoman, I don't believe that's correct with respect to the transcript, but if you could refer me to a specific page, I'd be happy to look.
I've read about it in reporting. Thank you. I yield back.
In all here, no real fireworks or anything that changes the equation. While, again, he said he did not exonerate Biden entirely, said he mishandled classified records. He tried to avoid GOP bait. I tried to stick to the report. Republican members were trying to get Herr to say, well, isn't the president senile here? Shouldn't Vice President Harris take over? Herr saying, that's not what I said. You had one Republican congressman from Wisconsin, Scott Fitzgerald, who was stating the definition of senile from Webster's dictionary. Mr. Herr, do you believe the president's senile? I did not. That's not what my report concludes here. And then at the same time, you had Democrats trying to get Trump involved here. Remember, in the report, Herr noted, as you mentioned, Jill, Trump's mishandling of classified documents he saw as more grievous. And so at one point, you had Democrat, again, Congresswoman Dean from Pennsylvania, literally requiring Herr to read the Trump portion of his report aloud. He's like, can't you read this yourself? And she goes, I'm asking you to read this, trying to get him to read it on live television. So she made him read the report portion that goes after Trump there. And then you also had Democrats saying, aren't you just trying to get a job with Trump here? Aren't you trying to help him during the campaign? Bottom line here, a lot of theater, not much in the way of new information really here. Basically, just a recitation of the report, the new transcript that came out. The bottom line is you're going to see a lot of ads this fall in regards to both presidential candidates' conduct, and you'll probably see a couple bites from this hearing, but you will remember this podcast because we tried to give you actual context into how those sound bites happened.
It's not often that somebody testifies on Capitol Hill and both parties go in. Well, I guess actually the tech CEOs, both parties usually dig in, but usually you've got one party.
If you're a tech CEO or a bank CEO or airline CEO, you get bipartisan like negativity. In this case, it was really Republicans trying to goad him into saying more than he said, and Democrats just yelling at him. Though we did get notes from some members of the Modus community saying maybe Herr did his job if both sides are pissed at him. So you have that, Jill. A fodder for both sides here out of the Herr report.
Okay, now to the war in Ukraine. The Biden administration announced on Tuesday that it is sending up to $300 million in weapons to Ukraine, the first new aid package since funding ran out in late December. So where is this money coming from, you might be asking? Well, apparently, Army accountants were able to put together money from contracts that had come in under budget. Now, included in this aid package, air defense interceptors, artillery rounds, and armor systems. Not clear if there's going to be longer range missiles sent as well. One official telling the New York Times that this is a makeshift solution that will really just keep Russian troops at bay for a few more weeks. They say it is a stopgap measure at best, but Ukraine is desperate for air defense systems as Russia just continues to bombard towns, especially in the eastern part of the country.
So you might ask, how does this work? How did they suddenly find several hundred million dollars in weapons after late last year saying, we've run out, we've completely run out, we can't send them anything more? Remember, Congress allocates and appropriates funds. That's how the government gets funded. But then it's up to the departments and agencies to spend it. Typically, there's very specific allocation, though over at the Pentagon, they get about $1 trillion a year. About 1/6 of the national budget goes to defense here in the U.S. So there's a lot of money moving around, and it's clear that they did some digging and found something more. DOD has been desperate to figure out ways to continue to stock Ukraine up with ammunition, with weapons. They've considered a whole variety of options. That's included having other countries that the U.S. gives weapons to give their weapons to Ukraine and then restocking those third-party countries. They also tried to dig around and research how many weapons have been seized by Iranian smugglers and then use that math to reallocate Ukraine. There's also consideration of taking American stockpiles of weapons since there isn't any money left to restock Ukraine, and basically then going to Congress being like, we got to restock our own weapons. So a lot of creative solutions sloshing around here as Congress, and I should say specifically a number of Republicans in the U.S. House, say they do not want to send any more aid to Ukraine after 2 years of war. House Democrats are trying to force a vote right now on the $95 billion aid package that includes aid to Ukraine, Israel, as well as humanitarian aid for the Palestinians, among other items. And so they're trying to find rules, parliamentary tactics to get that through Congress that will circumvent Republican leadership. Remember, a vast majority of members of the U.S. House support aid to Ukraine, but there's a percentage of Republicans who don't. Meaning it would, again, have approval, but Speaker Johnson doesn't want to upset those Republicans in his caucus by bringing it to the floor and having it passed by a majority of Democrats and some Republicans. Remember, it already passed the Senate, so it's stuck in the House. Speaker Johnson not being clear as to when he might bring it to the floor. Remember, he had that big meeting at the White House last week, Chuck Schumer saying, you're going to regret this for the rest of
time. This is the biggest mistake you have made in your entire life.
Yeah, and you saw it from Biden, the State of the Union last week. He compared 2024 to 1941 Europe and said, you know, we need to stock up our allies in the same way we viewed the threat from Hitler is the threat from Putin. He will continue country by country. So Republicans, you will regret this. So watch to see if Democrats in the House can also figure out their own tactic here.
All right, Moshe, we have plenty of news coming up, but now a word from a couple of our sponsors. First up, Good Chop, which offers fully customizable boxes of high-quality meat and seafood delivered straight to your door on your schedule. The products are vacuum-sealed and frozen at peak freshness, so you can stock your freezer and cook when you want. Choose from over 70 high-quality cuts, 100% grass-fed ribeyes, USDA, prime, filet mignon. They also offer sustainable and wild-caught seafood like salmon, Pacific cod, scallops, shrimp, and more. Moshe, we recently cooked the salmon in my house. It was absolutely delicious and really easy and nice to know that it was an option and we could do it whenever it was convenient for us. Now, unlike many other companies, Good Chop sources its meat and seafood exclusively from American farms and fisheries, so you can support local family farms and independent ranchers right here in the U.S., and it doesn't cost a fortune. Good Chop's price per meal starts at just $3.74. Good Chop especially prides itself on sourcing meat that comes with no antibiotics or added hormones ever. There are no artificial ingredients, only the good stuff. They are so confident in the quality of their cuts that they offer a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to goodchop.com/MoNews120 and use the code MoNews120 to get $120 off across your first four boxes. That is MoNews120 at goodchop.com/MoNews120 for $120 off.
All right, one more sponsor we want to get to today. Longtime partner of ours here at Mo News, Athletic Greens AG1 powder. We're always talking about health trends, food trends, how difficult it is to get all of the nutrients that you need for your body on a daily basis. And one way to try to get all the important ones is Athletic Greens AG1 powder. I first tried it more than a year ago. It's just one scoop with a glass of water in the morning. It's easy. It's quick. It lets you get on with your day knowing that you've gotten over 75 important ingredients, including tons of vitamins and minerals. It also has pre and probiotics to support digestion and gut health. Jill, it comes up all the time from the Mo News fans, including at our Mo News team meetup recently, where some people were asking about AG1. Did you and Jill really try it? I'm like, yes. We only endorse and partner with products that we try first. Important to note that. So with your first purchase of AG1, they're offering a special deal to the Mo News community. Athletic Greens is giving Mo News listeners a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs of AG1. You can visit drinkag1.com/MoNews. That is drinkag1.com/MoNews to take advantage of this offer. You can get a discounted monthly subscription or try it just one time for 1 month. Again, one more time, the number one, drinkag1.com/MoNews for the special deal.
All right, time for the speed read from the Washington Post. Colorado Congressman Ken Buck, a Republican who has also called out his own party at times, said on Tuesday that he will not serve out the rest of his term and will instead vacate his seat in Congress at the end of next week. This further narrows an already razor-thin House Republican majority. Buck said, quote, "I look forward to staying involved in our political process as well as spending more time in Colorado with my family." He had said in November that he wouldn't seek re-election to another term, but his announcement Tuesday that he would depart Congress so soon was a surprise, including to House Speaker Mike Johnson, who told reporters, "I was surprised by Ken's announcement. I am looking forward to talking with him about that." Once Buck departs, Republicans will outnumber Democrats 218 to 213 in the House, which means that Republicans will only be able to lose two votes if they want to pass legislation along party lines when everyone is attending and voting. Of course, there's always people who miss stuff.
Yeah, everyone has to be in. Like, no one can have a wedding to go to or a doctor's appointment or a fundraiser or be sick. They need everybody. And if you thought Mike Johnson's job was hard enough, it got even harder. Literally, he can't lose three members. He can only lose two at a time out of 218 Republicans. You mentioned the positive Buck quote. "I look forward to staying involved in our process." Jill, he's been going after Congress in recent weeks. Dysfunction. He did an interview with CNN recently where he said, "This was the worst year of my 9 years and 3 months in Congress. And having talked to former members, it's the worst year in 40 or 50 years. I'm leaving because I think there's a job to do out there, not here." A reminder here, Ken Buck marches to the beat of his own drummer. He was one of those handful of Republicans that ousted Kevin McCarthy last year, but he's also opposed the effort to impeach Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. He's been against the Biden impeachment. He's been calling out Republicans for downplaying January 6th. And this guy's pretty freaking conservative. And yet, he says that the party is going too far. He said recently, quote, "It is impossible for the Republican Party to confront our problems and offer a course correction for the future while being obsessively fixated on retribution and vengeance for contrived injustices of the past. This place," speaking of Congress, he says, "has just devolved into bickering, nonsense, and not really doing the job." Some people point out, Jill, that him ousting Kevin McCarthy probably didn't help Ken Buck. But at the same time, Ken Buck says, ultimately, the impeachment votes, everything, it sucks. It sucks so much that I will not stay here for even 9 more months. I'm headed back to Colorado. Jill, this now means there will be a special election in Colorado for this seat to fill it temporarily, and then another vote in November. Among those seeking the seat, Lauren Boebert. We've mentioned her on the pod before. Very right-wing congresswoman from another district in Colorado, but seeing as she doesn't think she can get reelected in that seat, she's been running in this seat. So does she give up her current seat and run it in the special election here? Or does she wait for the general election? it's a mess over there, but she is one of the more outspoken members of Congress. And so you'll see probably more of her in the coming weeks here as they figure out what to do with this particular seat.
You know, Moshe, you and I were talking a bit offline about this story and whether or not we wanted to cover it. And I do think it just points to this huge problem that we all know exists in Congress, which is just nothing gets done. It's becoming more partisan, which always seems impossible. The extremes of each party seem to be growing. And I think that the people in the middle, whether you're on the left in the middle or the right in the middle, are growing increasingly frustrated.
Yeah. And by the way, Ken Buck, no moderate. Ken Buck's pretty conservative, but even he says, like, you know, we still have to figure out ways to govern here. So a lot of it speaks to the primary system that we have and the gerrymandering and how districts have gotten more extreme. So the people who are most on the far right or far left tend to vote in the representatives. And there was a time where there were huge caucuses in the Dem and Republican side of the, you know, people who want to work in the middle. And those caucuses are dwindling further here as compromise becomes a dirty word for many members.
From Axios, the IDF announcing on Tuesday that Itai Hen, a U.S. citizen who was taken hostage by Hamas, was killed on October 7th and that his body is being held in Gaza. Hen was one of six Americans still considered held hostage in Gaza. He and more than 30 other hostages have been confirmed in recent months to be dead. The Biden administration is pushing for a hostage deal that will lead to the release of roughly 40 hostages in return for 6 weeks of ceasefire and the release of 400 Palestinian prisoners. Hen was also an Israeli citizen. He served as a soldier in the IDF. He was stationed at a base on the border with Gaza. The IDF announced that a special committee investigation concluded in recent days that the 19-year-old was killed in action on October 7th when Hamas militants crossed into Israel and attacked his base. And then his body again was taken by Hamas militants to Gaza, where it is currently being held.
Yeah, that's been a whole negotiation thing. They're holding, now it appears, upwards of 30 bodies, along with the 100 living hostages inside Gaza here as they continue to negotiate. The CIA director said in the last 24 hours that he still has hopes for a ceasefire deal. The Israelis offering that compromise, and then the Hamas side saying no deal unless there's a permanent ceasefire. We won't take a temporary ceasefire, and we want all Israeli troops to leave Gaza first before we release any hostages. At the same time, Jill, we're continuing to follow the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. From CNN, a ship carrying humanitarian aid to Gaza departed Cyprus, an island about 200 miles away. That's according to World Central Kitchen. That is Jose Andres' charity. It's a nonprofit which has been focused on feeding people around the world, including in Gaza here. It's the first maritime shipment of aid to the Gaza Strip. Remember last week, President Biden announced the building of a temporary port there in Gaza and this opening of this maritime route from Cyprus to Gaza. Keep in mind, these ships are pulling huge barges full of food, so they're traveling at about 3 miles per hour. So while it's only 200 miles, it's going to take about 3 to 4 days to reach Gaza. The pallets will mainly include food aid, rice, flour, beans, lentils, canned meats. The delivery comes as parts of northern Gaza, especially, the UN says, are on the brink of famine, and aid deliveries have fallen short by land and via those airdrops we've been telling you about. There have been a number of children who have died from malnutrition in recent weeks, again, in that northern part of the strip. And the siege on Gaza by Israel has drastically diminished essential supplies. Now, the Israelis say they're letting in supplies, and the UN is slow in delivering them, insufficient trucks, insufficient security. Hamas in recent days has told locals not to cooperate when it comes to security for these trucks. There have been accusations and video of gangs and Hamas terrorists taking over these trucks. So the road shipments are a mess. The airdrops are insufficient, hence the opening of the maritime route.
Now to the economy from USA Today. Rising gas costs kept inflation elevated in February, underscoring that the road to more modest consumer price increases may continue to be bumpy. The climb in fuel costs and rent offset flat food prices. So overall, prices rose about 3.2% from a year earlier, slightly up from 3.1% in January. This is according to the Labor Department's Consumer Price Index. Inflation has been gradually slowing, but as we talk about, it is still really high. Since hitting a 40-year high of 9.1% in June of 2022, inflation has slowed substantially, but after swift progress in the fall, Price increases have become more volatile. Many goods like used cars, furniture, and appliances have gotten a bit less expensive in the past year as pandemic-related supply chain snags have resolved. But the cost of services, things like rent, car insurance, transportation, just keep getting higher, in part because of sharply rising employee wages.
So some things are going up, some things are going down. We still appear to be spending a good amount of money, hence the prices are able to go up here because inflation, of course, is predicated on us actually spending money. The Fed Chair Jerome Powell told Congress last week that the central bank will likely trim the interest rate this year, but not until they see more evidence that inflation is moving towards their target. Targeted inflation is not 0%, it is 2%. That is a sign of a healthy economy. As you mentioned, Jill, we're still slightly above 3% now. So they were looking towards starting to lower interest rates in May, and now looks like they might wait until June. It is one of the reasons, by the way, we continue to see Bitcoin go through the roof here, hit new records, is a bet on interest rates dropping, which is then a bet that more people will then use that money to invest in Bitcoin, among other things. As far as the report yesterday, notably grocery prices were unchanged. So I guess that's good. Prices at least didn't go up there. And it comes as the price of commodities, wheat, corn, soybeans have come down amid some increased global production. Egg prices are up. Breakfast cereal is up. And fish, Jill, slightly up. I don't know if you noticed that at your local grocery store.
I only look at the very end, Moshe, and it's painful. Okay, from Bloomberg, San Francisco making it easier to turn empty office buildings into homes, a move aimed at easing the city's housing crunch and reviving its struggling downtown. Voters approved Proposition C, which offers a tax break for developers to convert up to 5 million square feet of commercial space by 2030. This is according to a tally of results from last week's election. Mayor London Breed, who championed the proposal, said that it will help the city meet a state mandate to create tens of thousands of new homes and to diversify the downtown. The measure comes as the tech sector, a key to San Francisco's economy, has scaled back its presence and workforce since the pandemic. They've cut workers and also allowed many workers to work from home. San Francisco's commercial vacancy hit a record 36% as of December, and it is expected to tick up even further this year.
So more people will be able to sit on the dock of the bay, Jill, and watch the tide roll away, if you know what I'm saying.
Is that about San Francisco?
Yeah, Otis Redding wrote about San Francisco.
I didn't know that. I didn't realize it was about San Francisco.
Yeah, he left his home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay. But back to the story here, Breed said the initiative would help transform the city's downtown from a 9-to-5 business district to an around-the-clock mixed-use neighborhood. Bloomberg reports that San Francisco stands out for its potential to convert office buildings to housing compared with other cities because of the way the buildings are shaped, their size, the ceiling height, proximity to public transit. That's been a huge thing. I know many of you ask that oftentimes because of the housing crunch. And the glut of office space, the openings of office space across the country with more people working from home, why can't they convert more? And it does take a lot, depending on when the building was built, zoning, a whole variety of things. Sometimes it's just not cost effective. But it appears here San Francisco has a lot of potential. The San Francisco Bay Area Planning and Urban Research Association saying that 40% of downtown buildings evaluated by a design firm recently were found to be suitable for conversion. That's double North America as a whole, where about 1 in 5 office buildings is available, is ideal for conversion to a residence. But still, there are skeptics. Moody's Investors said that conversions to multifamily housing are only viable for 13% of San Francisco offices. Nonetheless, given the price of things, given the housing situation there, the hope is San Francisco can attract people with more housing very soon.
From USA Today, Babies R Us is heading to about 200 Kohl's locations to offer baby gear, furniture, activity, feeding, bath, and safety products. The first will pop up in Kohl's in August of 2024, and about 200 more will follow in the fall. Kohl's announced this new partnership with WHP Global, the owner of the Babies R Us brand. Kohl's saying, evolving our assortment and bringing more relevant products to the millions of customers we serve is a core focus as we continue to deliver on Kohl's broader growth strategy.
So for those of you having babies sometime soon, the Babies R Us registry is coming back. It'll be available via Kohl's now. Babies R Us did go out of business back in 2018, along with its parent company, Toys R Us. And then last year, the store had a comeback with the opening of a flagship in New Jersey. Toys R Us is apparently also now reopening. There have been a whole variety of pop-ups. You might have seen them at a Macy's recently. Macy's, Kohl's, Jill, Toys R Us, Kids R Us. The 90s are back. And parents are applauding the news on social media, one sharing under the Kohl's Instagram announcement. There is such a gap in the market, so this is great news. Another comment we saw, you know, people celebrating that there are finally more places to shop for babies, for toddlers, and Jill, hyper relevant to this podcast and these two hosts.
It is true. Welcome back, Babies R Us. We missed you. All right, from The Verge, Airbnb will no longer allow hosts to use indoor security cameras, regardless of where they are placed or what they're used for. The vacation rental app previously let hosts install security cameras in common areas like hallways, living rooms, and front doors. Airbnb required that hosts disclose the presence of security cameras in their listings and make them very clear visibly. And it also prohibited hosts from using cameras in bedrooms and bathrooms. But now hosts cannot use indoor security cameras at all.
Yeah, the change comes after a variety of things, including that SNL segment. I don't know if you guys caught that on Saturday Night Live in recent weeks. They had one of their fun pre-produced videos mocking Airbnb, including a camera in the toilet, at least in the SNL sketch. The change comes after numerous reports of guests finding hidden cameras within their rental, scary, leading some vacation goers to scan their rooms for other cameras. Airbnb's new policy also introduces new rules for outdoor cameras. It'll now require hosts to disclose their use and locations before guests book a listing. Hosts cannot use outdoor cameras to keep tabs on indoor spaces either. They can't angle them that way. And certain outdoor areas have an expectation of privacy, like things like an outdoor shower and sauna. Jill, heard a variety of reactions to this on the Mo News account. Some guests who are applauding this. Some people who have Airbnbs saying that guests have become more rowdy, more damaging, more difficult over the years, and they defended the use of these indoor cameras as a deterrent for people to do things to their homes. So mixed reaction here.
I'm still stuck on the SNL skit where there was a camera in the toilet.
Jill, watch it right after we finish recording this podcast. It was well done. That brings us to On the Same History on this March 13th. Jill, a happy 242nd birthday to the seventh planet from the sun.
Are you leaving it for me to Uranus, Moshe, that is the planet.
Jill, Uranus. Uranus, actually billions of years old, but it was discovered by us here on Earth on this day in 1781. English astronomer William Herschel observed the seventh planet from the sun. It's named after the father of the god Saturn. So Saturn's father, Uranus, or as you say, Uranus. Before that, it was long mistaken as a star because of its dimness and slow orbit. But then thanks to William Herschel for being like, no, I think that's a planet up there and it deserves a name. So we'd like to thank you, Uranus, for years of jokes for middle schoolers and for jokes on this podcast.
I was going to say, and for adults too.
On this day in 1852, the cartoon depicting Uncle Sam made its debut in the New York Lantern Weekly, resonated with a whole bunch of folks, and the image of Uncle Sam today continues to be one that is used all the time. All right, we'd like to wish a happy 11th birthday to Pope Francis. Actually, he's 87 on this day. But on this day in 2013, Jorge Mario Bergoglio, the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, was elected Pope. Remember watching the smoke come out of the chimney there in the Vatican? I certainly do. I was working on live coverage over at CBS that day. So he took on the name Pope Francis I, hence 11 years of Pope Francis I. He succeeded Benedict the 16th, who had resigned, the first pope to resign in hundreds of years. All right, Jill, we end here with some pop culture history. On this day, 32 years ago, My Cousin Vinny premiered in theaters on this day in 1992.
My biological clock is ticking like this. And I see you smiling because you knew I was. That was what I was going to say.
I was wondering which line you're going to go with, but I had a feeling it was that one. Jill, on this day in 1999, Cher had a month-long stay at the top of the Billboard charts with Believe. Do you believe in life after love? At the time, it made her, she was then 53 years old, the oldest singer to reach the summit of the Billboard charts. And she is still performing to this day, putting out new music. I think she had that Christmas song she put out late last year. And one more musical item on this day, 17 years ago, Amy Winehouse's second album, Back to Black, was released.
Such a shame, Amy Winehouse.
She is missed.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Mo News podcast on this Friday Eve. Eve? Is that what we're calling
it? On this Wednesday.
If you like what you hear, please share this with your friends. It really helps us grow. Much appreciated. Follow us and subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. And give us a review in the App Store.
Jill, we got this great review last week from Jacqueline LS over on Apple Podcasts. We're all susceptible to the dangers of existing in our own echo chambers, only listening to the voices that agree with us, only focusing on the news stories as told through the lenses we agree with. It's dangerous, and we're seeing hyperpartisanship. Enter Mo News! Exclamation point. Unbiased, nonpartisan, the facts we need. Regardless of our own bias, my go-to for news, I highly recommend Mo News. If you're tired of partisan nonsense and hungry to get your news without a heaping helping of bias, thanks, Mo and Chill. Well, thank you, Jacqueline. I love that review.
I love that review, and I feel like I might incorporate some of that in our catchphrases and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know who Jacqueline LS is, but I appreciate you out there. So send us a direct message on the Instagram so we can say thank you directly to you and appreciate all of you who have left reviews. If you do that, it just takes a moment and really does help us grow.
All right, bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Mo News Podcast.